Welcome to Burr News Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burrnews.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to this, the latest Burr News Facebook Live interview. Joined this afternoon by the Minister of Tourism and Economic Development, Jamal Symonds. Minister, thank you for sparing your time. I know the House of Assembly is sitting, so I appreciate you giving us half an hour of your time today. There's only one issue really to talk about at the moment. That's the Casino Gaming Act and the amendments that you tabled, I believe, last week or the week before. Time seems to fly. Now, why change that legislation? Why did he want to do that? What prompted it?
Well, I think that when we look at the circumstances of the past couple of weeks, that we looked at the legislation, the governing legislation of casinos in Bermuda is based on the Singapore model. And we know that the Singapore model has a reputation for being very firm on corruption and very firm on those aspects. And this was one aspect of the bill that was not included. So we have added simply a part that's mirrored in the Singapore bill. It is Clause 11, Section Schedule 1, which deal with the ability to give direction to the board and to appoint and, as they say, disappoint as time goes on. But I think that when we look at this, I think it's very clear and important to make this point. This would not affect the day-to-day operations of the Casino Gaming Commission, not at all, and I have no interest in that. As a matter of fact, once I think we have our new person in place, I would like to be able to step back and allow them to do their work and get on with the business of getting the regulations finalized and getting the licenses. I think the Hamilton Princess already has a provisional license, getting those things through the chamber.
But what prompted it?
Well, I think that, you know, we look at the circumstances over the past couple of weeks, and I think that when you have a situation where there's clearly been a breakdown and there needs to be an adjustment, and to move forward, adjustment had to be made.
You're clearly referring to Alan Dunch, the current chairman, up until December the 6th, because he's issued his resignation letter to you.
Yes. And I want to thank him for his service. I want to thank him for his time. I think, but when you have a change, particularly a monumental change as we had on July 18th, it is normal and standard and proper that people either submit the resignation or at least work with the government to transition and make change.
But you asked him to resign three times, so yes. It's not normal for him to submit his resignation, is it, if you asked him three times?
There are others I asked who did it the first time.
Who?
There are others I asked.
On the Gaming Commission or just general?
Just in general. But I think that what you like to do is to give people the opportunity to do what is the, what normally in political terms would be the proper thing, offer your resignation to the incoming minister. And I hope that, you know, whoever my successor is, that the people I appoint will give them that courtesy as well.
So the only reason it was prompted, the legislation was prompted, was because you wanted the commission chairman to resign.
Well, I think also the ability to direct the commission. And when we look at the situation that arose with the NAMLAC committee, where we're dealing with the anti-money laundering, anti-terrorist financing issue, when you have a body of that magnitude that needs to be able to get responsiveness from parts of government, and they were not getting that level of responsiveness, I was not empowered to say, could you please provide this information? And so that flagged something that could be a problem down the road, and we need to be addressed.
As I mentioned, Mr. Dunch, the chairman, current chairman of the Gaming Commission, has issued his resignation letter, and I quote part of it. He said, "I've done this in the hope that I will have removed the impetus for the proposed amendments to the Act, and that as a result, the government will take the opportunity to reflect upon the wisdom of following through with them." Will you do that? Will you look at the impetus?
Well, I can tell you that the bill will stay on the order paper until December 8th, and we will consult as a cabinet, and we will discuss it, and we will decide.
Until December the 8th? Why that time?
It'll be on the paper until December the 8th, which is the last day that Parliament sits for this session.
And when you say discuss it, will you discuss the possibility of withdrawing it?
We will discuss it.
But will you discuss the possibility of withdrawing it?
It'll be a wide-ranging discussion on many aspects.
Well, you're not ruling that out.
And we will discuss it. And I think when you have a system of collective responsibility, it would be improper for me to prejudge where the discussion goes and where the nature of that discussion would be.
It's interesting timing, though, of course, isn't it?
There are many interesting things going on now.
So you're not ruling out dropping the legislation, is the bottom line?
It's part of a major discussion on many aspects of it.
Why did you ask Mr. Dunch to resign three times?
I think
what were the specific reasons? Was there anything?
When you have a mandate for change and a mandate to affect change, which is what I told him and the board in our first meeting, changes should be made. And I think that it would be proper that political appointees should reflect the fact that there has been a change and provide the opportunity for a new government to have the opportunity to put people in place.
Do you believe that a gaming commission should be independent?
I believe that they should be independent in terms of government not being able to interfere with the day-to-day operations, not being able to interfere with the awarding of casino licenses, and most importantly, not being in the ability to interfere with corruption investigations, criminal investigations, which is what our act does. We would not be able to be involved with the day-to-day operation. It allows legal, political direction in terms of policy. So, for example, if the NAMLAC committee requires information, I can ask them to provide the information, and they would be required to do so. If there was a situation in terms of reforming regulations, let's say, for example, I need you to go back and rewrite these legislations, I would have the power to direct them and not the power to say, could you please, maybe, and they might maybe do it.
You say you don't get, you're saying you don't get into the nitty-gritty detail, but reading the Section 8 of the amendment, paragraph 3, paragraph 3, the commission shall give effect to any general directions given by the minister. Now, that's pretty wide-ranging.
It's general direction and policy, but also it ties in line with the Singapore legislation, which is, again, it's about mainly to being able to direct in a manner in terms of policy, not in terms of day-to-day, not in terms of don't investigate this person.
The day-to-day is going to be affected by policy.
Exactly.
The CEO sets the policy. Mm. The day-to-day running fits in with that policy.
Yes.
So by doing that, you are de facto in control.
Yes, but at the end of the day, their job is to execute the policy. I'm not there to micromanage them. And I think the most important aspect of the independence is to prevent corruption. And I think that is the most important aspect than anything else. So when it comes to things like corruption investigations, when it comes to things of that magnitude, this does not interfere with that.
Does the there's a perception that, of course, and I say this very carefully, there's a perception that by having political interference, there may be more opportunity for corruption.
I will say this. The current Gaming Commission Board are political appointees. They were not appointed by the governor. They were not appointed by God. They were political appointees. So why are political appointees for one party objective and independent, but yet political appointees for another party are somehow not?
No, fair enough. There's a perception out there, and I wanted you to address it, which you have done, which is good.
Well, I mean, that is a simple reality. If, when their terms end, as chairman under the current legislation or members of the board, I can still appoint people. But I want to paint a scenario for this. So let's say Minister X, as terms naturally progress, appoints people to a board, and they're his people. He retires and goes off somewhere, but he still has control over them. His successor has no ability to direct them. His successor has no ability to remove them. That isn't a dangerous precedent to be set. And I think that's what we have to be concerned about. It's not about Jamal Simmons and Alan Dunch. You have to think long term.
Mm-hmm.
And with the ability to consult with the premier on these appointees, you don't get a minister in a fit of pique doing things. It has to be backed up by the minister and by extension cabinet, by the premier and extension cabinet. But I think that it's important that people understand the original commission were political appointees. They were appointed by politicians. And so there is no inherent sense of corruption or dishonesty within the PLP any more so than there is in the OBA.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so...
No, fair enough. The you mentioned going back into the nitty-gritty of the day-to-day running of it. And I noticed researching it last night that the late Sean Crockwell said that the commission will be the only entity that will determine who receives a casino license.
Mm.
And the transfer of a casino license without a prep application to the commission will be prohibited, et cetera, et cetera. That'll stay the same?
I believe so. I think that what we want to be able to do is say that we may look at it in terms of how we arrange licenses in the future. Because as a government, as a new government, remember, this is a policy that was implemented by the former government in terms of the direction and vision. What we want to do is make sure that, A, the people who have provisional licenses, such as Hamilton Princesses and designated sites, have comfort that they will be able to move forward first. But let's look at the options surrounding this. And I think part of our mandate was to be more inclusive, more diverse, spread opportunity around. And so as we look at these things going forward, that is part of the mandate that we have. And so we cannot necessarily say, well, we inherited this, let's just tinker with it and leave it as it is. There are opportunities to do more to widen the pot for a wider range of people. And I think that should be under consideration.
Why did you go back and use the Singapore model?
Well, the model, the legislation that we use is virtually a cut and paste from the Singapore legislation.
Yes and no. I mean, I did interview Richard Schutz some time ago in the days when we were doing podcasts for Burn News. And he said it really wasn't an appropriate act. I think he wanted some 40 amendments.
Yes, he did. And if you go and look at the fundamentals of the act, though, it is based on that model.
Mm-hmm.
The amendments were designed to bring it more in line with the facts of Bermuda in terms of being a smaller jurisdiction, in terms of some of the banking situations, things of that nature, if I recall. But the fundamentals of it are based on that act. And so when we look at that in terms of that, it was a natural fit. But we could have also gone to, I believe, Nova Scotia, where they have the crown companies, the crown corporations that run it, that have similar provisions. We could have gone to, I believe, Bahamas as well, that have similar provisions. So this is not something unique.
No, absolutely. I'm glad you raised that, because you did say in your statement that there are other jurisdictions as well as Singapore. So that you mentioned those. I was going to ask you what other jurisdictions there were.
Yes, sir.
In terms of the Gaming Commission itself, Richard Schutz is leaving at the end of the year. Alan Dunches will leave on December the 6th. His last day is December the 6th. Doesn't that rather leave it as a headless body?
No. You might very well think so. We have been preparing since July, and I think it's important that when we announce the successor to Mr. Dunch next week, we looked at individuals of high caliber of integrity, high caliber of ethics, and meet the criteria of what the legislation needs for a chairman. And so I think that it is my hope that the person who is announced will calm the water somewhat, as an understanding that we're not about trying to open the cookie jar for anybody.
What have you been preparing since July?
Just to be able to have a transition for a chairman that is reflective of our mandate for change.
So that was it was going to happen anyway then, regardless.
Mm.
When will you announce the new chairman?
Early next week.
And will that be coming from the existing commissioners, will they stay the same?
We'll be announcing the chairman next week, and that's all I'll say for now.
Will the existing commissioners stay the same?
Well, I can't change them until the law changes, so.
And you don't know if the law's going to change until December the 8th.
Well, I can't comment on that. Like I said, we have to discuss it as a cabinet.
Is there any way, again, I don't know where the search is for the executive officer or the chief executive, Richard Schutz's replacement. Where are you with that?
We have options.
And to be announced soon? Because he is leaving soon.
We have options. And I think that right now it's a matter of, we had to establish a relationship of mutual trust and respect. And I think once we have now repaired that relationship, then we can move forward together. And I think that's the most important part. I think that, you know, we have to move past the sort of personalities, because we never wanted this to be this shooting war in the media. We wanted this to be a smooth transition that maintained the integrity of the jurisdiction and that was able to really reflect what we were put here to do. And I think that when we look now, I have to still give thanks to Mr. Dunch, despite the way things have played out, because I do think that he took on a thankless task as a political appointee to the Gaming Commission. And I think that he's done his job to the best of his abilities. And now as we transition forward, looking ahead to the future.
Just looking at my notes, there is one thing that Alan Dunch did mention, and I'd be remiss not to raise it. In his letter, he did say about the proposed amendments, they are not appropriate in a Western democratic jurisdiction.
Mm.
And I firmly believe that if they are passed, the result could be calamitous in terms of moving the gaming initiative forward. First of all, your opinion on that, but also is that one first. But moving the gaming initiative forward, you're going to have a new chairman, you're going to have a replacement for Richard Schutz. Is it going to delay things? Talk about Alan Dunch's opinion first.
Well,
calamitous.
I will say this. That
if it happens, we'll find out on December 8th.
I will say this, that we are a country of laws, and the laws are not made by ministers sitting in chambers by themselves, writing things, whatever they feel like doing. We have an attorney general's chambers that have researched this, they've weighed the risk, they've raised the assessments, and they do not agree with the assessment of Mr. Dunch or the people who have been dragged out of who knows where to give opinions on it. But I think that when we look ahead at what we have to do, protecting Bermuda from corruption and particularly staying in line with the AML-ATF standards.
Because there's an inspection coming soon.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that we are looking at right now in terms of betting, that was an issue that was raised in the press. Betting will be going under the Gaming Commission.
Yes, it will.
It
okay.
will. But see, understand, as the minister, I could not direct them to take it on.
Right.
Even
but
though
now
it's
you
a
can.
Natural fit.
Well, no, so legislation is passed.
So these are some of the issues that arose. We have to be able to put it under one body and have regulations now to govern that, because it is a blind spot. It is something that we are aware of. The previous government was aware of it and didn't act on it for whatever reason, I don't know. But we are aware of it, and we think that it's important that we move ahead with this, with a gaming commission that has this under their mandate, that have people in there where we can work together, mutual trust and respect.
When will that happen?
Pretty quickly, I think. Yeah. I mean, I can't give a specific date because the legislative process is still the legislative process, but we understand the timelines in terms of our assessment next year. So we know that we have to have our stuff in order.
So how will that work then? So if you open a betting shop, you're going to have to go to the Gaming Commission to get a license?
The Gaming Commission will be the ones in charge of that. I think that what we want to do...
Roughly speaking, you've got to have an idea of...
Roughly speaking, it'll be transferred from the Ministry of Finance, to the Gaming Commission. So all the licensing and regulation would come through there. The way the relationship would work, working with the Gaming Commission, they would develop the governing regulations. The Attorney General's chambers would then work on the actual legal aspects of it. I would bring the bill to Parliament if I'm the Minister.
Okay, and you think that will satisfy the regulatory inspections next year?
We are working assiduously to satisfy all aspects of this because this is a critical part of our economy.
Because as I understand, you can pass with flying colors on everything, but if you fail on one, you get an overall fail.
Exactly, and I think it's important to mention as well, one of the arguments that the Gaming Commission gave for not moving ahead with the assisting the NAMLAC committee was they did not believe there would be any casinos in place next year. That was said in writing by the chief executive, Mr. Schutz. So we know that we have to get the regulatory package in place. We have to do that. We do not anticipate, based on what we've been told, that anything will delay any casinos moving forward.
So you're confident that the change at the head of the Gaming Commission will not affect the progress of any casinos opening?
We will not.
Because it's taking a long time, isn't it? Or it seems, to the layman, it seems to be taking a long time.
Well, understand, we still have to get the gaming regulations straight, and that's an issue there. There was some controversy raised about that previously as well. The Gaming Commission is unique in that you had individuals who could draft legislation, but again, it still has to go to the Attorney General's chambers. They're not like the BMA that have the ability to sort of, you know, go off and do your own thing and give it to us almost as a fait accompli. And so when you have these two bodies working like that, the Attorney General had concerns about the regulations that came over, and they were not an easy fix. And so, you know, I'm not a legal mind who could go into the details of it, but there's a lot of work that needs to be done to bring it in line with Bermuda's laws and make sure that it passed the smell test all the way around. So they are working on that as part of their overall major work that they're doing. Remember, we've got goodness knows how many cases of people suing us, and we're suing them. So the Attorney General's chambers is flat out. Yeah. But that is one of the priorities on the list in terms of getting the regulations right, getting them to Parliament, and getting them through. And that really closes the circle for the people who have the provisional licenses like the Hamilton Princess. The last step is for them to line up with the regulations.
Put you on the spot. Any idea when you think we get a casino open for people to walk into?
Well, I'll tell you, one of the things I've learned, and even when I've had discussions with developers, the biggest mistake a politician can make in this seat is to start predicting dates. Because 6 months from now, you say, Jamal, you said this date and it didn't happen. I like to predict dates I can control. And I think that one of the main aspects of this job I believe in, for me, from an economic development standpoint, is to remove the blockages and get things moving speedily. And so my goal is that if it does not come online, in terms of predicted in the letter we received from Mr. Schutz, it will not be because we were the impediment. We're trying to move things along and make things happen at every aspect of our economic development stage.
Okay, well, I think you stated your case quite clearly on where we are with the gaming situation. It's very interesting to hear that. I'll stay tuned on December the 8th to see whether legislation goes or not. Yeah. The other big talking point, of course, has been the America's Cup and the PwC report. First of all, there's been a lot of chatter, I've seen a lot of chatter, certainly, about an apparent comment relating to Walt Disney that you were alleged to have made about the America's Cup. Now, did you call it a Mickey Mouse event?
No, I did not.
What did you say? Can we clarify this? Because there's so many rumors going out there about this.
It's funny, actually. So this was a comment made on a radio show, and it was not directed at America's Cup. I was speaking in terms of the event authority is not being interested in doing Mickey Mouse events. And I went on to talk about these are events I want people to start wrapping their head around, thinking bigger.
Okay.
It is not going to be an entity designed to...
This is the event authority you're talking about. Right.
And let me give you a little bit of the background of this. The event authority was a concept that came to us in opposition when you looked at the America's Cup. And this is an event of the scale Bermuda has never seen before. And I think that, you know, the organizers, everyone involved, it deserves praise because we got an event off. The problems, major or minor, were kept off the big screen. And so we had this beautiful showcase for Bermuda. But there were aspects of it that fell through the cracks because it wasn't the ACBDA's responsibility, it wasn't the BTA's responsibility, it wasn't the ACEA's responsibility. So there is clearly a need to fill those gaps so that the entities that bring events, so if you have, for example, the International Triathlon, things like that, they can focus on what they do best and other people can worry about making sure that we've got the streets marked off and all these other things. But more particularly, when we either create or attract events to Bermuda, there is an aspect that I think we haven't focused on. Now, if you look at the America's Cup report, I believe they said only 29% of the ticket buyers were tourists. Mm. One of the challenges we face over the years is the over-reliance on Bermudian support of tourism events. So the ideal scenario, because, you know, if any event that is held in jurisdiction, there's going to be a significant number of locals who participate, whether it's Chicago, New York, or Bermuda. But if it's a tourism event, there is something clearly wrong if we are not going to break even if Bermuda doesn't support this. We have to move the dial in terms of getting people here. But not just getting people here, but also we have to talk about how when we draw people here, what are we doing to ensure that they come back? What are we doing to plant the seeds, they build a relationship with Bermuda that's not based on, I'm here for this event, I had a great time, and as the event moves, I follow the event. It's more about pulling the whole picture together. Mm-hmm. So it's about looking at our shoulder season and saying, what are the events that we can use to draw people in mm-hmm. in a February and March? Mm,
which is very much what the BTA is doing.
Exactly. But I think that we also want to expand wider, because as we're going to a younger market, right, if you look at the studies around golf and sailing, the followers of it are aging out. Mm. So when I say there's more than golf, sailing, rugby, it's not to denigrate those, because they have their place. They have a historical place, a cultural place, a legacy place. And to throw it aside would be foolish. It would just be as foolish as allowing tourism to die off as international business boomed. You keep these things because they're a part of our character. But you start looking at things like the Bermuda Film Festival. You start looking at things like, how can we grow these events so that now they're impactful, they're relevant, they are drawing the attention that we need. So I often get
people. So this is going to be the events authority. That will be their remit.
Oh, absolutely,
effect.
Absolutely. And again, this is, you know, this is, I want, what I don't want is a situation we've had for the past donkey's years. Somebody has an idea for an event. They come to the minister. The minister says, oh, okay, that sounds good. And they give it to tourism or they give it to whoever and they just go execute it. And you may have a nice event. And you may have a successful event. But is it impactful? Mm-hmm. Is it getting the bump that it should get?
Absolutely.
And so,
and the legacy.
And the legacy. And I think that's important. And I'm not a fan of this AEV assessment. I think it's the advertising equivalency value thing. I'm not a fan of it. Because
it's a metric.
It's a metric. But I think that my background is primarily political marketing. When you do political marketing, you have specific results. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter 2 million voters saw you if you didn't get 2 million votes. And so when we start looking at how we measure these things, we have to measure beyond how many people saw it to how many people we are putting in beds and how many people we're putting in planes. That, I think, is the step we need to make. And how much dollars are being spent on Ireland as
Absolutely,
well.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm. I just want to go back to the America's Cup. Mm. I mean, the Mickey Mouse thing, obviously, I wanted to put that to bed. But how would you describe the America's Cup now it's over? How would you describe it?
I would think that it was a world-class event that was well put on. But I think that the biggest challenge was twofold. One, it became overly politicized at the start. Remember, it was launched.
You were part of that.
Well, it was launched in the middle of a by-election that I happened to be running in.
And it carried on after that.
But no, but what I mean by this is that, again,
I mean, you were accused of that, not you personally, but the PLP was accused of that many times by Grant Gibbons, who was effectively America's Cup Minister.
Absolutely. But when you launch an event like this in the middle of a by-election campaign, one that was pretty nasty in a safe seat, be as it may, you automatically turned off a significant group of the population automatically. Automatically were turned off because this is a political scam. I don't see myself in it. When you have an event that, and I hate to pick on the guy because it's not his fault, the cup brought off and is met by a Scottish piper. There were certain messages that were sent early to a significant part of the community. This is not about you. And that is one of the challenges, I think, because not every event is meant to be for everybody.
It's interesting because you say it wasn't about you, but then on the other hand, you say we can't be reliant on Bermudian support of the event. So did it matter?
Well, the thing is, the political intermingle with the business is what's caused the problems. Because if I find myself in a situation, just to separate out from the America's Cup and the OBA aspect of it, my political success is determined upon this success or the perception of this success. That's when you find yourself getting into trouble. And so I think that's part of what happened there. A lot of political capital was put in on the front end, which created a division immediately. But the second aspect of that, beyond that intermingling, the capacity to understand that there are opportunities for people to be involved early. I think that we did not do a good job as a country. We can pick on the OBA all we want, but as a country, we did not do a good job of being inclusive, making sure that as many businesses as possible could get in early. Even when we look at the programs that were put in place, there are still people struggling to pay back because they got in late, they didn't have an opportunity to really be involved the way they should have. And that, I think, is where the event authority can really complete the circle. Because if I bring an America's Cup back in 5 years, let's say hypothetically, right, you've learned from some of the logistical challenges, you've learned from some of the outreach challenges, but now you also can say, okay, how can I get more people at the table? Mm-hmm. How can I get, and this ties into the other factor about the event authority, how do I get the people who came here because they're into that event to fall in love with Bermuda? Not because it's pretty, not because it's nice, but because they've had an experience around the island and they've seen a place that they've fallen in love with. And I think that is where you sort of close that gap.
I asked you how you describe it. How would you describe the America's Cup? Give me a sentence of how you would describe it.
It was a world-class event. I think that showed Bermuda could operate at that level. I think that, again,
I mean, it was a success.
Yeah, I think it
mean,
was.
I think but Brian Gibbons was quoted as saying it was a return of more than five times the actual government investment, which wasn't 100 million.
Well,
it was 66.
Understand, the Ministry of Finance has different numbers than there were in the report. Because unlike the America's Cup ACBDA, we have to pay for Cross Island, which is $39 million, which was not factored into that number. So we are now the ones who are paying the interest on it. We are now the guarantors of it. That is money that's out there. But let's go back. When you look at the numbers in terms of impact, again, 29% of the people who attended were tourists. When you look at the economic impact and reach, people who identified themselves as black only represent 15 or 16% of those who benefited directly. So those are issues that we cannot sweep that under the rug. We can, I say this, is that it is nice to say that you're making $1 million a year. But if I don't make even a fraction of that, it means nothing. And I think that's where we as a country have to start understanding that if we have these things, we have to try and spread the pie as much and as wide as possible. I think that is the biggest lesson I think we can take away from the America's Cup, is that when we have these events, one, we should not sell it as a panacea to everything. I think, love or hate the PGA Grand Slam, there were not people out there who had any illusions about what it was. I think that many people were given illusions about what the America's Cup was, and I think that led to some of the disappointment and some of the division. I think we have to be honest with people about what these events are, what they're intended to do, but then have clear metrics in terms of what we expect back. And I think with this, we have a great legacy to build on. I mean, we've got the super yacht policy, I think I mentioned in my speech at the Tourism Summit.
I was there.
This is important because we need to be able to play in that space. But not just, I think what we do in Bermuda, we tend to be late to the dance, and then we kind of, let's pull it together and get in, and here we go. And we want to lead in this space. I'm not content for us just to have some legislation and just sort of, you know, okay, we're here now, we can do it. We have to lead in that space. And that means getting out with the people who are the super yacht owners and who participate in that space.
I want to come on to that.
Exactly. And be in that space where we're starting to innovate and lead, not just sort of, well, BBI's got this, let's just do a little bit of that. We have to lead on this space.
Just before I come back to the super yacht legislation, ask a question about the America's Cup. If you were given the opportunity to have it back, would you?
I think that we would have to assess and look at where we are. I may not have $100 million laying around
yes
to get
or
with
no.
it. No, I think we have to look at it. I mean, I think that any event that gets that level of attention, that gets that level of interest, and it can attract high-end individuals, you can't rule it out of hand. But you have to look at the circumstances and the times where you're at. That $100 million might be able to go towards 10 events that extend the season.
Disputed $100 million.
Well, so where I come from, 64 million plus 39 is pretty close to 100 million. But again, that's the numbers the Ministry of Finance has. That's not the numbers I have. That's not the numbers that David Byrd has, the Premier, have. It's the Ministry of Finance's numbers. That is the where we stand. But you have to look at things at the time and where you are. And it may be that $100 million could be better spent over five or six events that extend the season, that are impactful, that are socially relevant, and be able to draw that group that we're looking for, the younger, high-end individuals. And I think that's what you have to assess. I mean, I would never rule anything out of hand. I mean, you know, I have people say, you're bringing the music festival back? I can't say yes or no, but you cannot go with the model that was 10 years ago.
Understood. Just to on the Events Authority, have you got an idea when that might actually start up? And is that going to kind of, do you envisage it will be a completely new body from the ACBDO, or will they kind of morph into it?
It will morph into it, because I think the structure that there is there is critical.
They've already got the playbook, haven't they?
Exactly, and I think we want to be able to, we don't want to reinvent the wheel, and I think it means being able to, and this is where I think this is important, I want Bermuda to start thinking of events differently. And I hope that the America's Cup, if nothing else, have us thinking differently. So that
when it's proved a point, hasn't it? That
exactly.
You can, Bermuda can host a world-class big event.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, we've done it before. The PGA Grand Slam is on
a
similar
scale. I imagine this was bigger.
Yes. But the same token, though, I think that what we have to be able to understand now is that when we think about tourism events, it's not just about the event. How are we promoting it overseas? What type of legacy impact? Is there a Netflix special tied to it? You know, are there some broadcasting rights where we can distribute it around areas where we reach the people we need? That's the level we have to start thinking of. It's not just about make a quick buck and have a concert. It's about, and that goes back to the point I make about, it's not about a Mickey Mouse event. It's about world-class events. And I ask, you know, why can't Bermuda have the Sundance Festival of the Caribbean or the North Atlantic or whatever category you want to put us in? Why can't we have world-class professional sporting events that showcase talent? Why can't we? The only limit...
Can we?
Oh, we can. Very much so. And there's some interest in some of those things as well.
Is there?
Oh, very much so. Very much so.
Anything because, you'd like to enlighten us about?
Well, I don't like to... I don't like to tell you about the meal until the recipe, the groceries are all collected.
Oh, I like the tasters.
but I think that what we found, and this is something that's really striking to me from my background in working in tourism, but also in this role, there are still too many places that we go where people don't know about Bermuda. You know? And... it's not even, they have a negative impression. We're just not on the radar. Mm. And so we had the WASTE conference, the World Alternative Investment Conference, and we had NBA players, professional boxers, high net worth individuals. Never been to Bermuda before, wasn't on the radar. So they're here talking about investment, and they're looking around and saying, wait a second, I can buy a house here. I can invest. I can come here on a weekend. I can party. I can stay. I can bring my family. I can enjoy Cup Match. I can enjoy Heroes Weekend. Their eyes were open. I don't have to be on a compound locked in and afraid for my safety.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't have to worry about people bothering me as a celebrity. These are the things that are major selling points, but more people need to know about it.
You mentioned the super yacht. Are we going to see legislation forthcoming soon about super yachts to encourage them here? Because I know that's something the BTA has been chasing, if you like, for many, many years, because it's
absolutely
potentially a big lucrative industry, isn't it?
I can tell you that the policy is being refined as we speak. I would like to have it a cabinet in short order, but again, legislative process. Government works at its own sort of speed,
Understood.
I don't want to put a date on it and then miss that deadline. But I think that people should be aware. This is something we are working on. It is a priority from my ministry standpoint to get done and get us out in that space. And again, it's about leading. It's not about just saying that we can do this.
I know we're running a little bit short of time. You have to get back to the House of Assembly, I understand. There's a few little questions I want to ask. The Economic Diversification Unit, that was your ministry got a big mention in the throne speech. I think it seems reading it about half of it at some stage. So this is one of the, you're a busy man. This is one of the areas. Any update on how that's going? Because this is the holy grail for Bermuda, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Everybody's been talking about the so-called third pillar, and this is a mechanism to introduce that. How's it going?
Absolutely. Well, I think you're seeing bits of it in terms of the tech hub, because that will eventually fall into that. But what we envision, supplementing what we already have at the Bermuda Development Agency, is the capacity to create and attract new industries. And I think that the Premier in particular is very keen with his tech background to take advantage of all of the new and innovative things that are coming down the line. So we're looking at different structures, looking at the best model, but that is something that is a priority. The Premier has told us, don't put it in the throne speech if you can't do it in a year. And so that is...
just put a timetable on it.
Well, that's what we were told. And so that when we looked at putting together the throne speech, that was the mandate. Be realistic, be ambitious, push, but it's better sometimes to shoot for what you know is attainable. So that is something that we intend to have within this year.
And just leading on from that, in the 100 days, I pledge it was a director of cooperative economics. Mm. What is that and where are we with that?
Well, the director of cooperative economics in the short term, is the ability for individuals to work and pool their resources, pool whatever they have to operate as a business. Now, I'll give you an example. If you have people that own, let's say, I own a goat, you own a goat, Dennis owns a goat. I may produce enough milk for my family, but the three of us produce enough to sell. Setting up the framework to encourage that type of behavior,
all right,
setting up the framework to be able to educate people about that. But also, if you look at places like South Africa and I believe Nigeria as well, there are legislative components which provide incentives for people to do that. And this is one of the things I think, particularly with a country like this that has a history of operating like that, of people sort of coming together and sort of sharing shared interests and shared sort of motivation. If we can encourage more of that, there is power in that. And whether it's shared buying power, be able to increase the sort of the cost of scale.
Lower overheads.
Exactly, exactly. So it's being able to drive that. We have identified someone as a courtesy. My board is reviewing them alongside the director of the BEDC, mm-hmm. because we wanted to have somebody, A, who would have the ability to sort of craft legislation alongside them, but also has an understanding of what we are trying to do. And we believe the BEDC should be a very powerful vehicle for empowerment, because one of the things that we have to do is be able to spur on more of the entrepreneurial spirit in Bermuda and try and find out, first of all, how to limit the things that slow down the process of a business getting started. Again, business, we do not want to be in the way of legitimate business progress. And where we identify things, when we look at, for example, the concierge service offered at the BDA, why not have something of that scale for regular businesses? And I'd give the story of a young man in my constituency. He had a business idea. He wanted to do a paintball business. You could go into the park and shoot paintballs at each other. He spent 6 months bouncing around government, different agencies, right, before somebody told him, you can't do this because what you use would be technically a firearm. It's illegal.
Oh, right, okay.
So those are the things. 6 months, he could have moved on, or he could have found another model, but 6 months was spent. Mm. And that's something that we want to try and end.
Remove a bit of red tape.
Exactly, exactly.
Okay, Minister, on that note, thank you very much for sparing your time. It was enjoyable.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for tuning in to Burr News Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burrnews.com, your 24/7 Bermuda news source.